Hello and welcome to Lightmap by Sifter. This is our first episode for 2022. Lightmap is a interview podcast where we talk to people doing interesting creative things in interactive media and video games. And on this episode, we're talking about something slightly different. Normally we'd bring you a game and we'd feature that. We of course will be talking about a brand new game that's due to come out this year called Wood and Weather, but this conversation is more about the process of making games and what impact that has on the environment. My guests on this episode are Terry Burdack from Melbourne's Paper House and Dr. Ben Abraham, a researcher who is just about to release a book that looks at the full carbon impact of the game development industry. And spoiler alert, it's not great. Paper House have decided to track their entire carbon output from start to finish for their new game, Wood and Weather.
Wood and Weather is like a silly light god game that has a look at a kind of wooden Melbourne and kind of unexpected and unplanned weather. We've deliberately not said too much because we're still developing it, and we want to make sure that We have the right messaging when we're in a better position, I think. So yeah, we're keeping the descriptions pretty light at the moment. But yeah.
Well, can you tell me a little bit, I guess, how your studio has kind of changed since Paperbark has come out? Because I remember we played it pretty early on before it came out. There was like an open day at the arcade just before Games Week 1 year, and you know that game it's one of the ones that I hold up as an example of here's what it like. If you want to look at what a typical Australian game is, a game that could only really, I feel, be made by Australians and tell an Australian story. But has your studio sort of evolved and changed over the time to be where you are now?
Oh, it's changed so much. It's changed so, so much. So basically, we were all insanely burnt out from making Paperbark. Like, that game almost killed us. We were very naive and very under-resourced. And we just absolutely worked ourselves to death to make that game. And so after that, we all just needed to do other things. We just dispersed. Nina has gone off to work in another local studio, which she's really has been enjoying and has been doing that for the last couple of years. Ryan has gone off to work with various other teams, but most recently he's been working with Route 59, and he was working on NecroBrewster. He ended up being one of the lead developers on that. And I have worked, like I kind of mentioned earlier, I worked in a bunch of different aspects of the games industry, the local games industry, because I wanted to learn a lot about that. So, I worked at the GDAA, I worked at League of Geeks. I worked for 2Point, and most recently in the last couple of years, I've been working with local indies in helping them get various aspects of their games together to kind of package them up into a nice little commercial thing. So that's been really interesting. And so we've all been kind of doing that, our own little thing, but we've still been kind of keeping the wheels turning on the studio. When I was wrapping up with GCAP and GDAA, I started working on a prototype, which was Wood and Weather. And it was just a little project I was kind of working on. And I approached Jack early on because I saw Jack's artwork on Twitter and I wanted it to be based in a city. And he did these wonderful Copic illustrations. Like they were incredible. And I was like, oh, this guy's artwork's fantastic. I'm going to reach out to him and just see if he'd be interested in doing some concepting for this game. And he was living in England at the time. And I thought he was like some cool English guy, you know, bashing out some Copics and stuff. But it turns out that he's just like a Melbourne RMIT alumni. And he's like, you know, best mates with Josh from 2Point, who's one of my good mates and shit. Like, he's just a Melbourne guy. I was like, oh, my God. Like, what about – oh, my God. And so, yeah, so Jack started doing a bunch of concepting and stuff. And then Sam started finishing up at Mountains, And we've been good mates for years and we wanted to work together. And so I just said, hey, what do you reckon about coming on? And maybe we could go for some funding and try to build it into something a bit bigger. And yeah, so we've kind of been doing that. We got really hit. I'm not sure if this is what you wanted to hear. It's kind of a big story. Like, it's been a couple of years. but basically, we got some initial kind of seed funding from Film Vic, which was really good. And we had heaps of ambition and ideas for what we're going to do in 2019. And then COVID hit. And so, you know, flights cancelled, studio closed down, like everything. And we just had to basically stop, really. We were working really hard, but then it just was too difficult for us to just pivot. So we all started just kind of doing other things for a little bit. And then we picked it back up again once everyone kind of finished their projects that they picked up. And yeah, so we went for Film Vic funding again, and we decided to just kind of go all in and try and self-publish. And yeah, we were successful with that funding. And so since then, we've now hired Caitlin Cronin as producer. So she's come on. And we've also hired Cole Williams as a support artist. And so now there's like a new team. So Ryan and Nina are still on the scene doing like businessy stuff and helping out with paperback stuff. But there's like a whole new team for Wooden Weather, basically. And now we also have a new studio, which we will be showing soon as well. We're still kind of building that up. But there's going to be like an actual physical space, and there's going to be a kind of public-facing element to it as well, which is unannounced. But, yeah, so that's kind of what we've been doing over the last year, is kind of just slowly building back up and rebuilding from COVID, really.
I guess the thing that I've noticed is that, you know, that environmental message is pretty core through everything that you do, Terry. In particular, anyone who's followed you on Twitter for about 5 minutes knows that this is an important thing for you. But now working into the studio, that's kind of where, Ben, you kind of come in. Can you tell me a little bit about this project that you're doing in order to really measure the impact that your company and this game has on the environment?
So Terry and I have been friends for a couple of years, like a long time. And I knew that he had a similar interest to me in kind of minimizing our kind of environmental impact and carbon footprint. When I finished my book a couple of months ago, it's with the publisher now, I wanted to kind of take some of the knowledge that I'd kind of obtained basically by doing this research and actually see what we could do with game developers to actually like kind of reduce some of the kind of impacts that game development has. But the very first step of that is actually to find out how big the scope is of emissions. So as part of my kind of book research, I gathered a bunch of data from developers directly, but they really only told me like a little snapshot of how much kind of energy they used and things like that. So one of the ideas I had was to do a more kind of detailed project where we actually track from beginning to end how much energy is consumed over maybe the lifetime of the development process. Because that could potentially reveal that maybe there's a lot more power used towards the end of the process, or maybe it's all towards the beginning, or maybe it's exactly the same across the whole lot. But whatever that ends up being, that will tell us some really important things about how game developers can reduce and then potentially offset their energy use and carbon intensity, which we know is going to be really, really important. If games want to become carbon neutral, which I hope they do, that's the number one message of my book, is that games need to become carbon neutral. They do have an environmental footprint, a carbon footprint. Then, what do we do? How do we reduce that? So really, where our project is about that very first step of finding out how big are the emissions and what can we actually do about them.
How are you going to offset those emissions? Is it something that you're going to get to the end and go like, all right, time to pay the piper, let's put everything in it? Or is it a project that's ongoing? You know, what does it look like in order to, you know, put your money where your mouth is in terms of getting to a carbon neutral position?
That's a really good question. And it is kind of hard. It's sort of still an open question that we've been talking about. For instance, we talked about like whether it's possible to say use Terry's household solar panels to like offset, you know, the emissions of the studio. Doesn't quite work like that. The way the Australian energy market and the way that emissions accounting works means that you kind of are responsible for whatever energy you consume, and you don't really get to pick and choose exactly where the power comes from. So like, we don't have an answer yet because we're in the very beginning stage of it. We haven't collected any data yet. But there's a couple of options that it could look like. So number one is it could involve buying carbon offsets, which is just where you spend a little bit of money to pay someone to plant some trees or reduce deforestation or other projects like that. There are other wilder ones too, like, you know, mid-ocean kelp farming, things like that, which are not really existing yet, but they're like, you know, a few years down the track.
Yeah, the carbon capture of
that's my next offsets. Business venture as well.
Yeah, yeah. It's very exciting. I think Tim Flannery loves that idea.
Oh, yeah, he loves it.
But another alternative too is to maybe do something at a studio level to incentivize employees to change behaviors. And that might be something as simple as switching power providers. So just in the past couple of weeks, we've seen in Australia the kind of like number one green power company, which is PowerShop, has been bought by Shell, which is like the number one polluting emitter in the world. That's sort of has got a lot of people thinking about changing their power provider to someone else. So yeah, maybe we could do something there.
Yeah, and what's really kind of good about it is, you know, as we're going to be tracking it, because we've been thinking about, you know, like, what are these solutions going to be? And because we don't know, that's the whole point. And so, but because it is quite granular and it is over like a period of time, you know, there's going to be opportunities and there's going to be like information that presents itself and solutions along the way. And that's what we're genuinely really excited about, is we're going to get these things are going to present themselves. And but it's just a matter of taking this kind of first step to kind of do it. Yeah. And it's kind of interesting because I'm not sure. Obviously, a lot of people haven't really gone for like funding before, either government or private publishers and that kind of thing. But there's a lot of requirements that they ask from you. Like, you know, they all have their own intentions and they all have their own outcomes that they're looking for. And they want to make sure that your project and your team aligns with those things. And, you know, that might be like some kind of diversity thing or accessibility and that kind of thing. And I noticed that there was a distinct lack of kind of environmental impact as a requirement for a lot of these kind of funding things. And so another reason why we're using this project as an example is because it gives us a really clear kind of time frame with these milestones from funding to release. And so we also want to kind of use this as a way of saying, hey, look, it is actually quite easy for us to track this and figure this out. You know, maybe this could be an additional requirement for getting funding, particularly government money. And so that's another thing which we would like to do and see included in you know, a lot of these kind of funding opportunities.
Yeah, it would make a lot of sense for someone like Film Vic to or Creative Vic to say, if you get funding from us to make your game, you need to do it in a carbon neutral way. But to be able to even do that, I think those organizations probably need you know, like more information about like what that looks like and what sort of requirements and burdens that imposes on developers.
I am really curious about that because, yeah, you said you're kind of in the early stage of this. What happens if it gets to the end and you realize, man, games are so bad for the environment, we should just really stop making them?
To be honest, I don't need much of a nudge to get to that conclusion. I've already tweeted before, I'd like, my dream job is to just, like, maintain a wetland. So, like, if that's if that's where it gets to, then, you know, see you later. We'll go out to the bogs.
It's a very long resignation letter, maybe.
Yeah, quite possibly. But that's it. Like, you know, if it is that bleak, then, you know, see you later. If it turns out that we just have, like, this massive, massive impact on the environment, then, you know, that's a massive ethical dilemma. And, you know, I know where I'm going to draw the line in the sand. So, yeah.
I suspect that it might be a shock to some, I think, to know exactly how extensive the whole industry is. And I think this is what my book is kind of pointed towards, is that as a whole, the industry does have a really substantial impact. So my findings of just the game development emissions were higher than the entire film industry's emissions, right? And that's, if you think about that, that's like flying to on-location shoots. It's like driving trucks around, cars around, lighting generators on site.
Blowing up hospitals and
blowing up things. Yeah, exactly. I think that, so as a whole, I think the games industry has a bigger footprint than most people would realize. But individually, and particularly small teams, I don't think that's where the main impacts lie. I think it's in other parts of the industry. One of the other things my book found through the research that I did was that smaller teams have a much harder time collecting that data, because you're not all in the same space, particularly if you're distributed around the world. You don't have like a power bill for the one kind of building that everyone's kind of working out of 9 to 5. And so that's been one of the challenges we've had to kind of address. Like, how do we measure everyone's power if it's Sam's working from here, Caitlin's working from here, Terry's working from here? And so I think we've come up with a couple of useful solutions, possible solutions for that, which we hope maybe other people can try out as well.
If you're talking of a studio like Sledgehammer, for example, one of the, you know, the big tent poles in Victoria, you know, which would have much more infrastructure, do you envision that it's going to be an easier process for them to measure what sort of impact they have, or have they got too many things that it's really tricky to sort of wind that into their processes now?
I mean, I'm not particularly familiar with the Sledgehammer studio and like the size of it and how it's kind of arranged. But anytime you have all of your employees in one location and that weren't only doing the work from that one location, you'll have a much easier time than if you have to measure everyone's energy use individually. Because at the building level, you know, if you've got a space that has a power arrangement where you're buying power from the grid and, you know, you pay a power bill, you can look at that and that gives you a nice concrete number and you can say, all right, we use this many kilowatt hours this month. We know what the emissions factor is in Victoria. We know that our power company offsets this much because we buy this much green power or they don't. And then you can kind of use that data to say, all right, here's what our footprint was based on the energy we used.
There's been a bit of, I would say, a speculative gold rush into things like NFTs at the moment. I'm just wondering how it feels to be doing a project like this when you see a bunch of people, colleagues that you may have talked to at a bunch of different events, going into this space that is, by all accounts, not great for the environment, to put it lightly.
It kills me. I was when I was making my coffee, I was just kind of looking out the window this morning, and there was a moment where I'm like, have I given up on society? Like, I was just thinking about like the monkey, like the bored ape stuff, and just like the clones of it and all that kind of thing. I'm like, have we actually done it? Like, is this how society goes out? Is with like monkey pictures? Like, yeah, I don't know. It really kills me. It really kills me a lot.
I have a slightly, like, obviously I'm anti NFTs, but I'm anti NFTs at the moment, at this particular point in time, right? So like in the short term, I think NFTs are horribly damaging to our ability to reduce our carbon emissions because they increase demand for computing. And now most of that energy at the moment is still produced by fossil fuels. Now, you project that same system into maybe 30, 40 years in the future when we've solved the kind of energy generation problem, when we're 100% renewables. I don't care. Go do whatever you want with your disgusting monkey JPEGs, whatever. But like until then, it's a mistake and it is a really, really bad trend that I hope more people stop and think about.
Yeah, I think that's really it. And I think it's – I do agree with Ben with that, because like if it is renewable, it's not like there's any real, you know, absolute issue with it. It's more just that now we're at a very critical tipping point where until we make that transition, we need to actually be really conservative, make really smart decisions, and really kind of, you know, make sure we're putting our chips in the right places. And right now, we've absolutely done the opposite. In a very novelty, ridiculous way, which makes it feel even more trivial. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like, you know, like just as an example, like disposable masks for COVID, like they're just frigging everywhere and it's so much waste. It's like, well, there's actually, we have a global pandemic. There's going to be a bit of that. That makes sense, right? But this is just like, they're not using it for any like reasonable application outside of just like, you know, digital assets and capital gain kind of stuff. So it's like, oh man, can we just hold off a bit, please? You know, yeah. But anyway, that's obviously just me.
I'm just curious as well, because you sort of mentioned that, you know, you'd like to see funding guidelines sort of move to incorporate better environmental impacts. And, you know, we do see that for film and stuff. There are set rates for people who are on attachments and other bits and pieces for that. Do you think it would be a good idea eventually for someone to have someone like an environmental producer attached to their project who could be able to do that? And would that be something that, you know, maybe going through this project, you'd consider having someone attached just to keep an eye on where you sit environmentally?
Yeah, Ben. Get Ben to do it.
Yeah, I think we've seen it some, like, so larger firms overseas have will have a sustainability officer. It's more of a common role than has been in the past. But I think for studios the size of Paper House, there's not really enough call for a kind of full-time position, right? It's more like you could get someone to do a couple of hours a week or a couple of hours a month, and I think that would be more than enough to kind of cover you. And yeah, so if other people out there are interested, if you want someone to kind of do some of that work, you want to do a similar project, maybe you've got a little bit of funding to put aside to it, yeah, get in touch and let's talk about what we can do and see if we can make your studio green.
Yeah. And also, like, we want to develop tools along the way with this as well. Like, there's obviously a lot of resources online and already people have had a crack at different tools and that kind of thing. But we want to at least, you know, come out with something that small studios can use to at least, you know, themselves get some kind of snapshot without, because that's the thing, like, a lot of these issues become issues because there's too much too many hurdles and too many things to overcome, and or it just seems too massive of a job. You know, you're already trying to make a game. That's already really hard. Trying to manage a team, that's really hard. You know, we've got, like, you know, a bigger push for like stronger QA and all this other kind of stuff in the industry now that is expected of small teams. And it's like, oh, do I really need to have to worry about the frigging environment as well? Like, can't someone else do it or whatever? So we kind of want to just like minimize that as well. And that's not to say that we're going to successfully do it. Like, we're also a small team. This is also our first time. We don't know what these outcomes are, but that is also the intention. We want to try and help these other teams be able to do it in a way that they can just kind of like build into like stand up or just part of their production thing. You know, like, there's no reason to think that can't just be another thing that, you know, just the producer, you know, can do. Sorry, producers. I know you've got a lot on your plate at the moment, but yeah.
And one of the things too about it as well is that there still is a lot of complexity around this sort of issue, right? So when you're thinking about like measuring something like just a couple of people working together and their cumulative carbon footprint, you're thinking about like energy consumption, which means you need to think about like power use, you need to think about devices, you need to think about ways you're collecting that data. It means thinking about, if you're in Australia anyway, the Australian energy market and the way that works and like the prices involved and how you figure out how much carbon has been generated per unit of energy. These things are like, it's possible to kind of pick this stuff up. Like, I mean, mostly I've taught myself by kind of looking into this stuff, by being really interested in it and just having, you know, a little bit of kind of background knowledge that's relevant. You just kind of accumulate it over time. But for people that don't want to spend those like hours, you know, reading up on how the national energy market works in Australia, like, which I don't blame you if you don't want to. Having someone that can kind of tell you a bit about that or a tool that can say, all right, well, this is the amount of emissions that you have when you use this many kilowatt hours of power, I think is really, really valuable.
I can't wait to keep talking to you about this particular project as we go along. Maybe we'll have to check in with you in 6 months' time, see how it's all ticking along. Ben and Terry, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us on SIFTA.
No problem. Thanks for having us.
No worries. My pleasure.
If you like insightful discussions about those high-profile games that everyone's talking about, then why not check out SIFTA's other podcast, Mainstream, in your podcast feed right now. We talk about those high-profile titles, those AAAs, some of those other smaller indie darlings, featuring insights from the award-winning SIFTA team and other special guests. You can find Mainstream in your podcast player. That's on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, Google Podcasts, or head to the SIFTA website. That's sifta.com.au. That's Terry Burdack from Melbourne Game Development Studio Paperhouse, and Dr. Ben Abraham, a researcher who is just about to put out a new book looking at the impact of the carbon impact of development of games around the world, one to keep an eye out for, and we'll bring you another interview for that in a coming episode. My name is Gianni DiGiovanni. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Lightmap, our first for 2022. SIFTA is produced by Nicholas Kennedy, Fiona Bartholomaeus, Daniel Ang, Adam Christou, Sarah Ireland, Viv Thum. Our senior producer is Mitchell Lowe, and my name is Gianni DiGiovanni, and I'm the executive producer. If you like this, you can support SIFTA and independent journalism by going straight to the SIFTA store. We've got video game inspired t-shirts like the one I'm wearing right now. You can pick up and support the work that we do. It lets us go to events, buy us new gear, all of that sort of thing. So that's sifta.store if you'd like to pick up one of these unique Australian-made designs and get it shipped straight to you, sifta.store. You can find more about what we do on our website. That's sifta.com.au, where you can find articles, you can find videos, you can find more podcasts, and much, much more. sifta.com.au. And while you're online, we'd love you to join our community. You can do that on Discord, sifta.com.au/Discord, where you can share your creative work. Each week, we share the creative efforts of the people in our server, calling it Sharing Sunday, and you can take part as well there. That's sifta.com.au/Discord. That's all the time we have for this episode. Until next time, have fun.
Hi, I'm Kyle Paletto.
And I'm Gianni DiGiovanni.
And here are the top stories this week on Walkthrough, SIFTA's weekly news podcast for Sunday, 5th of May.
Escape from Tarkov developers relent, allowing access to PvE mode for players who bought an all DLC bundle, but not before saying, sorry, you're mad.
Solo developed Mana Lords and indie city builder break sales and Steam records.
Take-Two shuts down studios behind Kerbal Space Program and Oli Oli World.
And we wrap all the cool things announced at ID at Xbox.
You can get every episode of Walkthrough for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and on our website, sifta.com.au, every Sunday.